What was the town, the city that you grew up in?
No, I was born in Santiago de Cuba, but I grew up in Havana.
Mm-hmm. What were your first memories about playing baseball?
Well, I started playing baseball from my early age, mm-hmm. you know, like when I was 7, 8 years old. And they have a league over there and, where I was born, Santiago.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when I started, you know, my first step in the little league. You know, they have the same kind of system they have here in the United States. You know, you go from the little league to the you know, to the grade school and then high school.
Mm-hmm.
And then in my case, I started in Santiago at 8 years old, and then I went to Havana. I moved to Havana. And Havana, it's kind of, the system started changing. And because I was, you know, I was a little bit better than a lot of the other kids. They have in a school in Cuba, they call the AIDE. They have the sports school, you know, give like a scholarship from the early age. Like when I was 11 years old, I was going to the school in the morning, playing baseball in the afternoon, and then another school and at night, and then go to bed. Now you have to stay in that school for the whole week, go home only on the weekends. So from my youngest years, I was playing very, very good organized baseball.
Were you able to watch games that the island leagues were playing back then in your young years?
Oh yeah, yeah. You know, it's in Cuba, you know, the baseball is the number one sport. And from my early age, I was, you know,
mm-hmm.
fan of the game. I knew everybody. I knew the players and who were playing the, you know, in the National Cuban League. And
who is your favorite team?
Well, my favorite team was my hometown team where I was born,
mm-hmm.
Oriente.
Mm-hmm.
But when I went to Havana, mm-hmm. you know, I was playing when I get to the Elite League. I was playing for the Industriales and Havana team, mm-hmm. which was, you know, the rival. The rival of my hometown team, but you know, you gotta do what you have to do.
Who were your favorite players before you became player yourself?
Cuba.
No, in Cuba.
Oh yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Well, you know, I have a lot of favorite players. Like, I was very fan of Pedro Chavez. I would like the way he was hitting. He was my favorite guy to see him hit. And the way he was playing hard. He was the kind of guy who was very talented, but, you know, very, very rough in the field. You know, he was kind of hard playing and a winning guy. That was my favorite guy,
mm-hmm.
Pedro Chavez.
In what positions did they have you try out at in the baseball school?
Well, I wasn't at a tryout. I started playing the middle infield.
Mm-hmm.
I was playing second and short. That was early, you know. Until I get to the Elite League,
mm-hmm.
where they transferred me to the outfield,
mm-hmm.
to the outfield and third base.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's when I was playing all my life, outfield and third base. And then when I got here, you know, I started playing third base because they have the necessity in the major league team in 84. The way Sparky Anderson was planning to play, you know, I was feeling better playing third base and then do the platoon situation, hitting again left-handed hitter. Left-handed pitcher, I mean.
As you said, you were playing for Industriales.
Yes.
Right? How many years did you play for them?
For the Industriales?
Yes.
Industriales, I played about 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
4 years for the Industriales.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a very good team in Cuba, you know. This is the thing who's not easy to play, you know. It's like you play here in the Big League and Cuba, you play for the Industriales like you play for the Yankees.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everybody knows who you are. It's on TV all the time. Mm-hmm. It's in the capital, you know, Havana.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the publicity there is much better than everywhere else. It's a very hard to make that thing. It's a very popular thing in Havana.
And of course, most people who live in the United States know very little about Cuban baseball since the Castro years anyway,
mm-hmm.
because, you know, the veil of secrecy or, you know, embargoes and all. But what is the cult of celebrity like when you become a popular baseball player in Cuba? You know, what's the reaction to you if people see you? Is it much the same as the reaction that the professional players get here in the States, or is it different?
Yeah, it's about the same. You know, just the only thing that changes there is the much money you make, which is, you know, you don't make that much money in Cuba and playing ball, you know. But it's the same reaction. You know, everybody in Cuba know who you are, especially when you make a national Cuban team. Everybody in Cuba know who you are, they treat you very fairly when you are that kind of celebrity, when you are, you know, you represent your country in the Pan American game on the world championship. You know, they know, they treat you very, I mean, little different than the regular people. Which are not mind that, but you know, it's not. It's like that everywhere, I guess.
When did you, as a youngster, first get the sense that, oh, I'm the best player here on the field? You know, I'm the best player both sides.
Well, you know, I always tried to be the best when I was playing there. You know, it's a very hard competition there. You know, the competition for position in Cuba is a lot of much. There's much competition in Cuba than here, I think. It's because, you know, it's the number one sport. Everybody play baseball. And everybody want to make it to the national Cuban team. Everybody want, not only to the national Cuban team, everybody want to play at least in the national championship, which was not easy to make because, you know, you got to go through a long process that the whole year. And then the guy who are established there in that team, like Industriale, Oriente, you know, you got to wait for, like they wait here for the major league. You know, you see a lot of guys over here in the minor league camp try to get a chance and see if there's any spot open in that thing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the same way in Cuba. When you make it to the league, to the elite league, you know, you establish yourself there and you can play there for a lot of years. But, you know, the competition is very tough. And you always have to think you are the best. If you're not trying to be the best at the level you play, this will be very, very hard for you to make over there.
Who were the scouts in Cuba who recognized your talent and brought you along, recommended you to different people?
Well, you know, Cuba is not like your numbers are the one out you're scouting.
Okay.
You know, it's not. Yeah, they have a lot of people in the stand and the commission. They have the commission people who are, you know, who looking at you through the whole year. But if you don't have the number, you know, it's not, it doesn't do anything for you. You can have a talent, a great talent there, but if you don't put your number, if you don't hit 300 or you don't make too many errors in the infield, you know, they go by number. They don't go by names. They don't go by the way you look in the field. They go by number. So anybody, I mean, the whole commission, I cannot point one guy.
Who are the coaches that you had who had a positive impact on you as a player?
Well, here or there?
No, there. We're still in Cuba.
There's a lot of coaches in there. I start from there, you know, from the little league. I can mention, you know, a bunch of guys. Alberto Blanco was good.
Pedro Perez from
when I was little league in the 80s. And you know, the school I was talking to you about.
How do you spell that L? Are you talking about?
A-D-E. It's like E-I-D-E.
Okay, my Spanish isn't as good as yours.
A-D-E.
Okay.
It's like E-I-D-E.
A-D-E. Okay.
So, you know, it's a lot of, you know, from that time, from the time I was in the 80s, you know, I have Pedro Perez, I have Andres Ayon, and then, you know, from, it's a lot of guys. I don't want to mention anybody, so, you know, you don't want to miss it. A lot of people, but I got a lot of help in there from Oscar Sandiña, Zahira, Oscar Sardinha. Those was the little people who, I mean, it wasn't not too many people. I did not No, to tell you the truth, nobody showed me how to hit. I think I'm born with that kind of, you know, talent, and I just make an adjustment little by little by the time I was growing up and growing up. But, you know, the guy who gave me a chance to show that was Jorge Trigoura, who was the manager of the Havana team. And, you know, he put me in his roster, and he gave me a chance to show that, you know, to give me a chance, the opportunity to play every day and the national championship.
Was there a hitter whose style you tried to pattern yourself after?
To pattern myself?
Yeah, to copy?
For me to copy him?
Well, you know.
No, I do not. I didn't see anybody who tried to copy, no. I never did that. No.
So your style came from inside.
Yeah. I believe, you know, as a hitter, you have to have your own style and work from there. You know, just make a little adjustment, and just nobody can be a better hitting coach than yourself.
Were there any nicknames that your teammates or the opposition gave you?
The teammates?
Your playing days? No?
No. Not there.
Not there. Here they did?
Oh, well, here when I was in the major league, they were calling me Bobby. You know, it's Bucky Anderson.
Like the Barbie doll?
Bobby.
Okay. Bobby. Okay.
You know,
like
just
Bobby Higgins.
Yes, exactly. They just showed him my name, Barbaro. You know, he was. He has a little problem, you know, rolling the tongue to say Barbaro. So he was calling me Bobby, and all the teammates was calling me Bobby too.
Well, the name Barbaro, your parents gave you that name. Was it after a relative or?
No, that's I just born that day. I mean, it's a day in Cuba they call San Barbara Day. So there's a lot of Barbaros in Cuba who were born that December 4th. That's the day which was San Barbara.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of Barbaros and a lot of Barbara, you know, for that, just to born that day.
Teammates in your Cuban days that you had great friendships with, who would those people be?
Well, there would be Rey Vicente Anglada. He was a great second baseman. Mm-hmm. You know, those guys are not playing anymore, I guess. Well, but Vicente Anglada, Pedro Medina, Agustin Marchetti, Braudilio Vinen. There's a lot of, I mean, I was getting along well with everybody on the team, but you know, Felix Isasi, Rodolfo Puente, Alfonso Urquiola, you know, all those guys, I was getting along well with them. And all those guys becoming legends in Cuba because they were too good. And they stayed back there after I left. And you know, most of the guys have become a manager of the national Cuban team. Some of the guys work with the commissioner of baseball in Cuba, you know, because they have that talent. And they had that much of quality.
Were there teammates on the other side of the coin who were just jerks?
What? What, the other side?
Yeah.
Well, no, I don't think so. I mean, everybody was trying to beat everybody there. Like I said, the competition in Cuba is very tough.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Oriente has a good team. Havana has a good team. The Pinar del Rio has a great team. Matanza, you know, it was nobody name.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's a baseball, it's a very clean baseball, very clean field team in Cuba. Nobody, I mean, they're not allowed to fight in the field or anything like that. You know, it's like a very friendly field team. We play the baseball that we're supposed to be playing, you know, hard, but not to hurt anybody, not to. Because, you know, if you might hurt somebody from the national Cuban team, and then the country is the one who suffered that.
Now, it was your dream, I imagine, to play in Ligue Nationale, yeah?
Excuse me?
It was your dream to play in the Ligue Nationale?
Yes, in the national Cuban team?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. That's the dream of everybody in Cuba. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you play for the national Cuban team, everybody knows you.
What was it like to be living that dream? To actually experience that dream, to be playing. You played how many years in
the national Cuban team? 3 years.
3 years.
3 years.
And what was that experience like?
Oh,
and you look back
awesome.
On it now.
I look back on now, and you know, I'm very, very proud of that. very proud of that because it's not an easy thing to make.
Mm-hmm.
It's not an easy thing to make. And when I made that thing, we went to the world championship and we won those things.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, you know, we represent our country well.
Yeah.
And you know, I'm very happy about it, and I really take a lot of pride
in
that.
In the world championship.
76.
Mm-hmm. And the Pan American Games, how often did you participate?
I did not have the chance to go to the Pan American Games because it was not in the in that cycle. You know? I make it to the world championship, and then you know you have the Pan American Games every 4 years. The Pan American Games was supposed to be in here, in Indianapolis, in the 80s, no, I don't think.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Colombia, I think it was. But before that, I left Cuba before that.
Mm-hmm. Where was the World Championships held that year?
And then Cartagena, Colombia.
What brought the satisfaction inside you that you wanted to leave?
Well, not the satisfaction that I wanted to leave. Yes, I wanted, yes. Coming here to the United States and see if I could play in the major league.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was very tough. I was the first Cuban from the El Castro era who played in the big league.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, a lot of people don't know that, or they did not realize that, or they don't have that kind of information.
They think maybe
they do have the information, but they don't say.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why. But I was the first one from the national Cuban team, from the Castro era, who played in the major league. But now, at that time, the money was not the same way as now, so, you know, the publicity wasn't not too good. But now they're coming from the national Cuban team, and they give him like $12 million, so everybody knows him right away. And they follow him up, but I won the championship too.
Did you seek permission through official channels to try to go to the USA to play ball, or did you realize that they would say no?
No, it's not. They were not saying no. You know, I came in the Freedom Flotilla. Mm-hmm. I did not defect from the national Cuban team.
Mm-hmm.
I came in the Freedom Flotilla in 1980. I mean, that was the time where Castro say anybody who wants to go to the United States, they can go. And I was one of the ones who jumped in the boat.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like I defect from the team. I just left Cuba.
Mm-hmm.
To play here, try to get the chance, give the chance to play over here, mm-hmm. professional ball.
Mm-hmm.
I got the opportunity to do it, and I take a chance.
Mm-hmm. Who did you leave behind in terms of family?
Oh, I left my mother, I left two daughters, I left my brothers and sisters.
Mm-hmm. What kind of boat? Was it even a boat?
No, it was a big boat. It was a big boat. I will not get in any of those rats, no.
Mm-hmm.
I will not do that. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm scared of that, and I don't suggest anybody to do it. But you know, if you do it and have the chance to come over here, so be it. But I not recommend that. I came in the big boat, mm-hmm. and the fishing boat,
mm-hmm.
which was over, you know. It wasn't too many people on the boat, but it wasn't not a small boat. It was a long boat.
How many people were on the boat when you?
It was like 200 people. 200 people, but it was like a fishing boat.
How long was the trip? They always say 90 miles to, you know.
12 hours.
12 hours.
90 miles in the boat is a long way.
Did you get boat sick?
Huh? No, I did not. I did not get boat sick because, you know, we were talking and there's a lot of people around, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You're not, if you don't get too concentrated in the water, you know, you can make it easy. But, you know, people who start looking at the water, go with the food boat,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, the bouncing, and then you get sick. But you just go by your business and talking around and walking around, you know, it's not easy, but it's not that tough.
Were people surprised when they saw you? Barbara Gabriel, our boat?
Well, the people who was here from Cuba, yes. I mean, mm-hmm. they was very happy, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Surprised because I was here and very happy at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
Because they will have some kind of Cuban guy going for the chance to play in the major league.
Was there much difficulty getting people to believe that you were a Cuban baseball player
no.
who wanted the chance and to
no.
he's just a Marielita, you know, he's just, you know.
No.
He's just
no, 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 it wasn't that that because what I did is what, I mean, the guy who signed me, Orlando Peña, he knew I was for the national Cuban team. And the only thing I had to convince was the Tiger organization, mm-hmm. because all the Cuban knew what kind of place I was.
Mm-hmm.
And the only guys I had to convince it from was the guy from the Tiger and the people around the league.
There was no
which
competition?
Which was not too tough to do.
For your services?
Hmm?
There was no competition for your services?
There was competition, but, you know, I just raised my game a little bit and I just went to, I did what I had to do. Yes.
But, I mean, no other team than the Tigers were interested in you?
I don't care. I don't know. I don't think so. I don't think so, but they were the first one, the Tiger. I just went over there and they went to the refugee camp and the first team who went over there was the Tiger.
Mm-hmm.
So,
wow.
I didn't know if somebody else was coming around. I just jumped in the first offer I got.
And you knew your reputation?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Did he ever show you his bubble gum ball?
No. Well, Peña's the famous. He's a very funny guy, but he never do that.
Well, he would put some bubble gum and tobacco juice mm-hmm. on the ball, and
yeah, he's very tricky.
He's
a tramposo.
Yeah.
Yeah. The tramposo pitcher.
Mm-hmm. So after you got signed, did they leave you here in Lakeland to get acclimated, or?
Yeah. Well, After I signed, I had to wait in the refugee camp for about a month
mm-hmm.
until my paper and the immigration, the working paper for the immigration were ready.
Mm-hmm.
And then I flew to New York for one day. You know, some of my relatives, they were in New York, my cousin. And I stayed there for one night. Then I called David Miller. And David Miller sent me the plane ticket from New York to here, to Tampa, straight to Lakeland.
Describe what the conditions were like in the refugee camp.
Like any other refugee camp, the condition wasn't that bad. They treated us very well there. They feed us. They, you know, we had some place to sleep.
Mm-hmm.
They was feeding us three times a day, which you, in Cuba you were not seeing that very often.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not like in Cuba you were dying hungry, but
mm-hmm.
it's not three meals a day.
Mm-hmm.
It's different there. So they were training up very well. And then they sent me over here to Lakeland, and Lakeland I stayed for the half a year. And they gave me like a week to get in gain shape.
Mm-hmm.
And I started playing for the rest of the year here in Lakeland. Mm-hmm. Got a good year. Got, 364, and then the father. Then I went to internationally. From there, it was all to me.
What was how was culture shock?
What the culture?
Living in America,
well, you know,
different from what you see on TV.
Well, not culture shock. I mean, the we know what to expect. I know what was expecting. I mean, what I was expecting over here in the United States. You know, the way of life will be different. The way of living, you know, the English mm-hmm. will be better. But it was tough. You know, we had to from the beginning. At the beginning, we was living me and two other Cubans who was signed by the Tiger.
Who were those?
Roberto Salazar and Eduardo Cajuso. They signed. They never made the national Cuban team, and the A club team. They didn't make the national Cuban team, and the junior league. Mm-hmm. Those guys were in the national Cuban team, the junior league. But they make it the national Cuban team, and the so-called major league. And we were living over here in the Holiday Inn, or we were living.
With the
late Dwight Lowry.
Mm-hmm, yes.
Dwight Lowry was my roommate, mm-hmm. Our roommate, and we was living all together, four of them in one room, because the money is not the way it is right now. And, you know, it was a little process to adapt to the situation, what to eat, what to order in the supermarket, you know, what we going to eat tomorrow, and who's going to cook, and who's not going to cook. So I hand out to Dwight was cooking for us the first 3 or 4 days, and then we start making our regular food, like Cuban food.
Could Dwight speak Spanish? Is that why they put
no.
him with you?
No, Dwight wasn't speaking
Could
no
you
Spanish.
Speak English?
No. How we get along? you know, anybody could get along with Dwight. Dwight Lowry was a great person, you know. But, you know, we just to communicate each other inside there. Mm-hmm. And he was pointing, hey, want to eat, you know, pointing with the phone, with the finger, and, you know, when, and then those guys got released. And so then Viola Yod was the general manager. And they sent a guy called Luis Sanchez. Mm-hmm. Luis Sanchez, he was playing the rookie league. And they called him up to Lakeland. And he was helping me, mm-hmm. you know, as my translator.
How long did it take you before you felt comfortable carrying a conversation in English?
Oh, it took me a few years. Not a few years. I mean, before I carried a conversation, it was like, I think the following year, in 81, I was able to follow a conversation with my roommate. You know, the people who couldn't understand what I was trying to say, and they knew my accent, and you know, they really tried to help me. And I really appreciate that from those guys. It was like, Daryl Woody and Steve Younger.
Who's the first fellow?
Daryl Woody.
Daryl Woody.
Yeah.
Do you dream in English or Spanish now?
I dream in English now. Well, you know, in order for you to to learn, I mean, sometimes you have to think in English. Mm-hmm. You know, you have to think in English. Even when my English is not so well now, but I try to think in English. If I'm going to have to do something over there, mm-hmm. I'm not saying, in my mind, I don't say, okay, yeah, this is Spanish. I just say inside me, I got to go over there. Mm-hmm. I mean, I try to think in English. Mm-hmm. I got to go there, I got to do this, I got to do that. So that's the way, you know, you give. I mean, my English is getting a little better now.
But there is a value that you bring because the ability you have to speak Spanish mm-hmm. to players who are fresh
yes,
up, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I mean, over here in the organization, you know, there's a lot of kids over here from Dominican Republic, from Venezuela, from Puerto Rico who don't speak any English, and we help them. I help them a lot.
And they can tell. We had, where I work, a fellow from Cuba who would translate news articles into Spanish. Yeah. And when the other Spanish language editors would read the translations, they said, that's a Cuban. Mm-hmm. You know? because, you know, they could tell it's a Cuban or Argentine.
Yes,
or,
yes.
Do you detect that yourself in the inflections or the little idiomatic expressions, the little phrases Puerto Ricans or the Venezuelans or the Cuban use?
Very easy. Mm-hmm. Very easy. It's like here in the United States, you can, I think maybe you, I can't, but you can say, can detect who's from New York or who's from North or who's from the South. Mm-hmm. I can't do that. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I cannot. I mean, everybody speaks the same and have the same accent. And my wife, mm-hmm. who is American, mm-hmm. She listens to somebody speaking. She goes, well, where are you from? You're from the South? You're from South Carolina? Or South? I don't know. How do you know that? Oh, because the accent. Well, that's the same way mm-hmm. in Spanish. You know who's from Venezuela, who's from Puerto Rico, who's from Colombia, mm-hmm. who's from Cuba, mm-hmm. you know, it's different.
When you came to the USA, what gave you more trouble, being a Spanish speaker without much English skills or having black skin?
The language. The language gave me more trouble than my skin. Yeah, I mean, no question. The English was the one who gave me the more problem because you know, I tried to avoid any kind of situation who could have given me in trouble or could have been cut off in that situation in black and white. I did not, you know, I get get along well with my teammates, and I was going where my teammates mm-hmm. took me. Mm-hmm. I was not trying to go here, and to go there, and to anywhere where I don't know what situation will mm-hmm. will confront that. You know, mm-hmm. just try to stay out of problem, stay out of trouble, and it really didn't. Until today, you know, I don't have any trouble, any problem with that.
Now, your AAA baseball before you joined the Tigers was in Evansville.
Evansville. Mm-hmm.
What was that town like? It seems to be very remote and kind of small.
A small town, yeah. A small town, but you know, Indiana, Evansville. When I was in Evansville, I did not go anywhere. I was off baseball. I was thinking just baseball. I was not going anywhere else. I have a lot of friends in Evansville. I have not a lot of friends, I have a couple of friends. And they were white person. Mm-hmm. And they was going with me everywhere. And I did not have any trouble with that color bird. I got more trouble with the language than anything else. Mm-hmm. And everywhere.
Okay. Now that we've done so much about your pre-major league days. Mm-hmm. Let's go to 1984. Okay. It's a magical year, I think. Everybody now says that players sensed that 1984 was going to be their year in camp. And you made the club out of spring training.
Yes.
What was the competition? How do you assess the competition in a Tiger camp, like versus the competition in Cuban ball.
In Cuban ball,
yeah.
I didn't have too much confidence in me. Mm-hmm. I mean, I have good years in the minor league. Mm-hmm. I mean, everywhere they put me in the minor league, I have a great year. Mm-hmm. I mean, for me to make it as an 84, it was not a fluke. Mm-hmm. Because I put the number, I show the whole organization, I was ready to play at the major league. And then when I get to the Tiger camp in 84, I already had the experience to be in that camp mm-hmm. Two years earlier. Mm-hmm. Early four, I was in the camp in 81. Sparky Anderson was coming down here and they invited me to play over there, mm-hmm. you know, a few games in the major league. And then they put me on the roster in 83. And then 40-man roster. So when I got there in 84, I was confident that I couldn't make that team.
You could not?
I could. I could make that
team. You could?
Yes. I could make that team. I hit 325 in Triple A, and I was hitting third all the time. I was a good clutch hitter. And, I think I had the team made mm-hmm. before the camp was done.
Now I'm going to ask you your impressions of some of your teammates from the 1984 season.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay, Jack Morris.
Well, Jack's a very competitive pitcher. You know, he's the kind of guy who don't back out to anybody. Mm-hmm. And he just go out to the hitter with his best pitcher, do his stuff. When he's, doesn't matter if he have a regular or good stuff that day, he will go out there on the mound and battle. You have to beat him because he's not going to let you beat him. So he's a great pitcher.
Has Jack been here yet?
Well, he was here last year. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. He was here last year working with the pitching staff over there. I don't know if they have any plan for him this year, but I haven't seen him.
He's going to be on a TV
team. TV analyst, yeah.
Howard Johnson.
Well, Hojo in 84, Hojo was he was in the major league the year before in 83. Yes, he was in the major league in 83. He was not the player who became later in 84. You know, so he was platooning there with sometimes me in third base or Tommy Brooklyn, sometimes Darrell Evans. And, Hoyo was the kind of player who was learning all the time.
He was what all the time?
Learning all the time. He wasn't, he He was hitting extra hitting with Darryl Evans a lot. Mm-hmm. And hard working, and you know, it paid off for him. Mm-hmm. Good runner, good base stealing at that time. Was very quick, great power, a switch hitter. Mm-hmm. You know, he's a, because I played with Hoyo from Lakeland, double A, triple A, and major league. So I knew him very well, and I knew what Hoyo could do. And you see what kind of player he became to be.
Darryl Evans.
Well, Evans was like a father figure for everybody. As soon as Darryl came to the team, you know, the commentary of the team, you could have seen the commentary there that it will be different. It will be different. That year will be different. That's what the people who were there before say. Because when I get there as a rookie, you know, I see good commentary there. I see everybody was getting along well, everybody was playing hard, and everybody wanted to win. Mm-hmm. You know, and everybody was playing the game they were supposed to were playing. The way Bucky Anderson was playing, the way Ken Gibson played the game, the way Alan Trammell played the game. You know, everybody has their own rules there. And we accept the rules Bucky gives it to everybody. It's like me, I would like to play every day. I would like to play every day in 84, but it was not the plan Bucky has. And we take the rules. You know, we were not bitching or talking behind people's back and talking about so-and-so, or I should play today, I should not play tomorrow, or whatever, you know. We were pulling for whoever was in the field, mm-hmm. it was our team there. Mm-hmm. And we were pulling for everybody. And everybody was trying to do the job, everybody mm-hmm. was trying to win. Mm-hmm. You put 9 guys in the field and we are here on the bench, you know, but that's our thing over there. So we had to, you know, focus in the same way they were focusing the field, we were focusing the bench. Because you never know when the opportunity for you will come. So you had to be ready anytime. Sparky Anderson was that kind of guy who just come around and say, be ready, because you might hit next inning, or even you are sitting there, but you know, by the time the fifth inning comes around, mm-hmm. you knew you would be in the game anytime. Anytime, so you had to be ready for that. Mm-hmm. And that's what makes an 84 a great team. You know, everybody was, mm-hmm. everybody wanted to win, everybody knew his role.
Mm-hmm. Aurelio Lopez.
Well, Aurelio was my father, I guess. And, you know, from the time I came, I was here in the minor league. He was the guy when I was going over there to the big league, for the big league camp, even when I was not in the roster yet, but like in 81, when I went, Sparky Anderson bring me over there to the roster, I mean to play some games over there in the major league, or Aurelio Lopez was the one who took me under his wing and told me what the, you know, he was my translator. Mm-hmm. After the game, he was the one who was taking me out to eat, and, you know, it's... I can't say anything bad about that man. I really appreciate what he did for me, and he helped me a lot. Mm-hmm. Plus, he was a great pitcher, a great stopper. I mean, a lot of heart, a lot of hearts, and a lot of balls. You know, he was getting after hitters with his fastball and his slider. Mm-hmm. He was a great, great pitcher.
Well, people used to call him Senior Smoke.
Senior Smoke.
But did you call him that in the clubhouse, Senior Smoke, or is that
no?
That was in the newspaper.
That was in the newspaper. Mm-hmm. We call him Aurelio, mm-hmm. or Lopi.
Larry Herndon.
Mm. A very classy guy. Who that you know, it's like the same way. Hard work. Wait for his turn. You know, he was the guy who was playing every day. I mean, until 84. You know, Larry was, he was a 20 home run guy almost every year, 80 or 90 RBI. And then in 84, he struggled a little bit mm-hmm. at the beginning. And then they started platooning him. And, you know, he was quiet. And he took that role, too, because, you know, that's the kind of professionalism, you know, he professional guy he is. And Larry was one of my favorite players in that team. I mean, I have a lot of guys. Everybody was getting along well. Mm-hmm. But Larry Handel was my favorite guy then.
Mm-hmm. Lance Parrish.
Big Will, you see, he's a great catcher. great kasha. I mean, he was a cleanup hitter, and he got a great year in 84. I think he hit like 30 home runs and drove in like 90-something runs. And you know, we don't have anybody who hit, who drove more than 100 runs. Mm-hmm. But Lance was one of the guys who was he was getting his hit and his home run in the clutch.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and defensively he was, you know, he's a great catcher. And hard work too. You know, you could have seen Lance here in the training camp. Everybody was sitting around and Lance was coming here and do a lot of laps around the field, you know, taking care of his body and be ready for the season.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just a mentally tough guy.
Milt Wilcox.
Wilcox is he was getting along very well with Aurelio, and with everybody. You know, Wilco was a veteran guy too, and he did a great job for the 84. You know, he was hanging around a lot with Aurelio and the Latin guys. Great person, great teammate.
Lou Whitaker.
Well, Lou was a great teammate too. I mean, a little bit more quiet, like him and Chet Lemon. They have their own belief, and we all respect that. And they respect whatever you do. You know, yes. When they was going to the field, they were doing 100%. And like Lou and Chet, you know. What can you say about Lou Whitaker? You know, to me, he should be a little bit more closer to a Hall of Famer than they put him.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, he had the number, and 20 years playing with Alan Trammell, and be the combination of they was. It's not easy. That's something to sit down and think about.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how when you gonna find two guys who play together for so many years and be a winner.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's amazing.
Rusty Kuntz.
Well, Rusty was a rural guy, you know. He was platoon sometime, and he was the kind of guy who was sitting on the bench and look at everything and you know, looking at the other managers and see if he can steal some signs, and he was helping out that from the bench a lot. You know, he was looking, very intelligent player.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very intelligent player.
Doug Bear.
Well, Doug is coming from Cincinnati. He was from the Spike Janus school. So he knew. Doug Bear did a good job, too. I mean, with everybody in that team was getting along well. And everybody, I mean, even the people who came later to the team, they was, you know, adapting the situation there. They was, you know, they were making they own adjustment to the group. You know, they was getting in the group with the same group, like Rupert Young.
Mm-hmm.
When Rupert Young came from in the trade, you know, he feel welcome there. He will feel comfortable there in 84. And you know, Rupert Young did a great job there. And
mm-hmm.
It's like, you know, that was the kind of thing we were. You know, just if you play hard, you know, you're welcome here.
Did Dwight make the club from spring training?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So you had that 1 year together as teammates all season long, pretty much, yes?
Yes, yeah.
Because I don't know if he played in 1985.
He did, too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think he did.
Mm-hmm. What, during your year, your 2 years as a Tiger, stung you in terms of criticism that may have been in the press or on television?
You're criticizing from me?
Yeah.
Well, you know, I don't remember the bad things.
Mm-hmm.
And at that time, I was not even reading the paper.
Mm-hmm.
And I was not even watching TV.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I cannot tell you, you know, what was bothering me there, you know. The only thing I want to do, I was doing as a major league when I was there in Detroit was playing.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't matter what they say on the paper, or it doesn't matter what they say on TV. I was playing my game, you know. Yes, maybe some people thought I should have played a little harder, or I should have been a little hard worker. but that was the way I was. I was even when you thought I was not in the game, I was playing hard. So that was the way I was playing. Even in batting practice, you know, there's a lot of criticism about how I was going about in batting practice. You know, there's a lot of people who take the batting practice differently. I mean, I was going to the batting practice, my batting practice, working my stroke. I was not going to the batting practice and try to impress anybody. Try to hit home run over here and long pop out to left field so I can show you my power. No, I was the kind of guy who was going over there to work on my stroke and see if my swing was correct. Just nice and easy swing. Now, when I came to the game, I will have that mechanic down, and I just will speed him up a little bit. But a lot, not a little bit, a lot. But that was maybe that's the kind of criticism I don't take, because everybody's different. You know, not because I was going to batting practice the way I was doing it. It was like I didn't care. I was working the way I was working from the time I was in the national Cuban team, from the time I was working here in the minor league. That was the system who took me to the major league. So when I get to the major league, I don't think I have any reason to change that. Because if I change, then I will be a different kind of hitter. And I don't think I could have been a different kind of hitter.
How do you compare the competition between the major leagues and the Cuban League Nacional?
The major league is without doubt the best league in the world. You know, the Cuban league is good, but not compared to the main.